Hi, this is Jim Swilly. Welcome to Metron Live. Metron is a Greek word that means sphere of influence. I believe in living your best life possible, and that's the reason for this podcast. This is my Metron. Now let me help you discover yours. All right, welcome to Metron Live podcast, coming to you from beautiful historic Kirkwood neighborhood, Midtown adjacent. Metron people, would you please welcome the podcast people? We're finishing up our series today. I've enjoyed this series, and I'm ready to end it because I don't know if you've ever taught series before, but you have to walk out everything that you teach. And I've done, if I had a Sunday school teacher to give me some gold stars, I would have, let's just say in the last month, I've had plenty of opportunities to practice what I preach, and I've done it. There was a time I would have failed miserably, and this one I thought, no, I remember what I'm teaching, and it's all good. The title of the series is As He Is, So Are We in This World. Of course, we're using that from 1 John chapter 3, one of my favorite verses. And the rest of the title is Healing the Planet Through Inclusion, Empathy, and Prophetic Insight. And let me say this about inclusion. Today is Pentecost Sunday. And I posted a thing day before yesterday that I started Church of the Now 38 years ago on May 26th, which was on Pentecost Sunday. It comes at a different, it's based on 50 days after Passover, so it's a different day every year. But somewhere, usually end of May. And the reason I wanted to bring that up with inclusion is Pentecost is as much about diversity and universalism as it is about the Holy Spirit. You can't have one without the other. Because Jesus said, oh, it's okay. I just make sure y'all heard it too. Jesus said, it's necessary that I go away. And the I there referred to his incarnation as a human being. It referred to his nationality. It referred to his gender. All of those defining things. He says it's necessary that I go away so that he can come. But really what he was saying is, I'm going to be back without the restraints of nationality, ethnicity, gender, all of these labels. And so that's why we see on the day of Pentecost, and I don't know if I'll ever finish Acts in the Now, but I did do Acts chapter 2 in the Now, and I posted it a little while ago for the the possibility of a Bible in the Now. We'll see. Let's sell a few more of those Gospels in the Now before we start going for the whole shebang. I'm glad you believe in me, but settle down. I've told y'all this 10 million times, but I initially started with the Bible. I don't know if you ever tried to do a paraphrase of 66 books of the Bible, but the Bible is a big collection. And then I got into thinking, really it only matters what Jesus said. So let's just do the Gospels. And then somewhere about middle of the Gospels, I said, the Gospel of John really says it all. I mean, do we really need Matthew, Mark, and Luke? I was able to, whatever year that was, to eke out a Gospels in the Now. And I made sure that I pointed out that in Acts chapter 2, it specifically says that in Jerusalem, now granted, these probably were Jewish proselytes, but they were from Africa, Arabia, Europe. It specifically mentions Italy, Cappadocia, Asia, Asia Minor. So when God appears as Holy Spirit, it's the God not of Israel, but the God of the whole world. Israel was the starting place. The intention was the whole world was supposed to become the Garden of Eden. The whole world was supposed to become spiritual Israel. And that's why if people ask if I'm a Zionist, I'm like, not really. I mean, I love Israel and I've been there and I get it. I understand why people want a homeland. But spiritually, the whole world is supposed to be Israel. Paul talked about the Israel of God. So I think it's appropriate that we're ending this. We've talked a lot about empathy, but specifically also about inclusion. I think it's very synchronistic that we ended this series on the day of Pentecost. But I've already shown you a lot of scriptures. I want to show you this one. This is 1 Corinthians 13:7, and I'm going to show it to you out of the extremely wordy Jonathan Mitchell New Testament. But to give you a point of reference, if you're looking at the King James, 1 Corinthians 13, beginning in verse 4, it says, "Love suffereth long and is kind, love envieth not, love vaunteth not itself, is not puffed up, doth not behave itself unseemly, seeketh not her own, is not easily provoked, thinketh no evil, rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in the truth." And then in verse 7 it says, "Beareth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, and endureth all things." And then verse 8 is where he says, "Love never faileth." If you've got an actual 1611, it'll say charity. But the actual Greek says agape. So those four words, it bears everything, it believes all things, it hopes all things, it endures all things, that's the north, south, east, and west of every relationship. Every relationship requires that you learn forbearance. The word forbearance means that you put up with somebody's idiosyncrasies. There's nobody that has a successful marriage or partnership or relationship or friendship that hasn't learned forbearance. Until you learn to say, this is who they are, and I love them no matter what. That's bears all things. Believes all things is always looking for the best in everybody. They just reopened the historic Terra Theater, and it's the second oldest movie theater in Atlanta. They reopened it. It had gone out of business, and I went to their opening, their ribbon cutting ceremony, and it was very cool. And then the following day, I went to see a matinee there, and it's a new movie. It's with Julia Louis-Dreyfus. It used to be on Seinfeld, and it's called Wow, you're on it, Michelle. I just thought it. Anyway, it's interesting that I saw this while I'm teaching on this, because he plays a psychiatrist who is married to a writer. And it's very smart. It's like a smart, even smarter Woody Allen movie. It's very, very well written. But the whole premise of the movie is, how much do people really tell each other the truth? And her thing is, she's written several books, and she craves her husband's approval on everything. So she's out with her sister one day, and she sees that her husband is with the sister's husband, and they're in a sporting store looking. And so she said, "Let's go in there and say hey to him." And the guys don't see the girls approaching, and when they stand behind him, she overhears her husband say, "She keeps giving me this book to proofread, and I just don't really like it that much, but I don't want to tell her that. And, you know, why does she keep giving it to me? What do I know? I'm a psychiatrist." Anyway, the whole movie is about her just being completely devastated, because she's like, "How can I know if you're ever telling me the truth on anything? All this time I've given you these transcripts of books of mine, and you've said they were great. Now, you know, maybe all of it's a lie." And the whole movie is they start showing other people in relation. Like, he has this couple that have been coming to him for therapy for years. And they finally just get really honest with him. They say, "We don't think you're helping us. We just need it. And we've spent $30,000 on this. We want you to give the money back." And he's like, "Well, it doesn't really work that way." And the whole thing is about, How much do people actually tell each other the truth? It was very, very well done. I don't know if I would recommend it. It might not be your cup of tea. There's no explosions. There's no chase scenes. None of that. But it's very, it definitely captures the human condition. And what's that got to do with bears all things, believes all things? Well, in the course of their conversation, the two of them have a son. He's like 20-something, and his girlfriend breaks up with him, so he comes home to stay for a few days because he's kind of devastated. And he says to her, he said, "You know, when I was a kid swimming, I wasn't that great a swimmer, but you used to tell me, 'You're so good, you could go to the Olympics.'" And he said, "I wasn't that good." He says, "You should have just told, I wasted too much time doing that, when if you had just said, I don't really think this is your sport. Go find a sport. And it really, they don't, it's not preachy or didactic. It's just, it kind of does pose the question, like, how much do you speak to somebody's potential? Like with your kids, if you say, you can do anything, well, that might not totally be true. I don't know, you know, I think I could do anything. I don't think I could have been the quarterback for the Patriots. You know what I mean? It's like there has to be some, there's some guy who got in big trouble a few days ago because he was in an interview and they were talking about Michael Jordan being the greatest. And he said, well, he is 6'6". So, I mean, it's like it, of course, Michael's fans are going, he said, no, I'm not saying, he said, there's other people who are 6'6". Who can't play it, like he couldn't get himself out of that hole. And I thought, you can't. I understand what you're saying, but there have been short people who have played basketball really well. So it's, and there's tall people who have no, talent at all. So don't try to define what gave somebody a leg up. Which brings me to bears all things, believes all things, what is the right thing? Do you say to somebody, wow, I love this book that you wrote. It's awesome. But really inside you're thinking, I don't know if it's all that. But is that calling those things which are not as though they are and speaking to their potential? Which is part of the reason why I use the phrase healing the planet through inclusion, empathy, and prophetic insight. Because there is a degree of the prophetic that you speak to. I called Howie this week. I was talking to him. I said, man, because he taught at the Florida school system for 30 years. I said, aren't you glad you're not teaching in Florida right now? I mean, like, because everything, every book they've banned in Florida are the books that he used to teach. And like, he used to take his class to Auschwitz, and and now all of the, all of this stuff has come under the umbrella of critical race theory. And he said, I don't know what I would possibly do if that were the case. He said it was hard enough when I left. Now it would just be absolutely impossible. And the reason I'm bringing that up is, for years we would go spend time with Howie and he would just gripe about how much he doesn't like the way they changed teaching. And he said, all the things I signed up for, they don't do that anymore. And I've got these kids I was teaching before they were born, and they're assigned to, critique my, style, whatever. And I said, why don't you retire? And he said, well, I guess I could. I said, why don't you retire and start another life? Go have a travel blog or something. You like to travel. So every time I see him on a cruise with his blog, I think, you're welcome. But I didn't say, why don't you try out for, a Broadway show? I used to think, I know y'all cannot believe this, but back in the day, I used to think, if I had gone to the ministry, I could have been on Broadway. I could have. And I remember the first time I went to a Broadway show and really saw what those people do, and I'm thinking, they do this 8 times a week? And I'm not saying I don't have a nice voice, but I thought, nah, I couldn't do that. Now, I don't think they could get on stage and interpret a message in tongues and, do some of the stuff that I take for granted, but yeah, I get it. Y'all, that's why this ticket costs so much. I understand. Because, no, I'm not that. Not 8 times a week. And so I, spoke to his potential. Even, y'all know my cousins, Dana and Hannah. I'm not saying I'm the source of all things, but in these two cases, I might have played a little hand in something. Years ago, Dana and Hannah had us over for dinner, and this is back when the cathedral was really big, and Dana used to be over all of their, functions and events. And I said, why don't y'all should have a catering company. I mean, y'all are so good at this. You really know how to put stuff together, and you know how to do big events. And I'm not putting words in their mouth. According to them, when I said that, they decided to start a catering company. And all these years, that's what they've done. Now, again, I didn't say, why don't y'all go to Malibu and become surfers. I did. The prophecy has to come kind of in your lane a little bit. A prophecy has to, on some level, kind of, come on in. kind of confirm, you know, what you sort of have already been thinking. So love believes, bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, and endures all things. Now, I want to show you this in the JMNT. I love the way he interprets this. Here he says, love continuously covers all mankind. It is habitually loyal to all humanity. It constantly has an expectation for all mankind and is continuously remaining under and giving support to all people. That's a lot of alls. Or since all can also be neuter, it progressively puts a protecting roof over all things. It is habitually trusting in and believing for all things. It is continually hoping in or for all things. It keeps on patiently enduring all things. I love that. I think that really sums up the whole idea of empathy and inclusion and loving all people and trying to understand, even if someone has had a different life experience than yours, they are still a human being, and you need to, if you're going to coexist with them, you have to, on some level, get inside their understanding and look out of the world through their eyes. Nobody can do it completely. Nobody has had anybody's exact life experiences, but at least an attempt to hear somebody out, which is why I'm going to talk to you for a moment about apologies. Let me tell you why I'm bringing this up. This is not a teaching on a proper way to apologize, but I want to use this as an example of why empathy is important. Let me ask you this. Have you ever had an issue with somebody and you had a break in the relationship and maybe it was their fault and they attempted an apology to you and the apology actually made the situation worse because it was so clearly obvious that they didn't understand what you were upset about? Two things I come to mind on this. Because I was, somehow I got into a YouTube rabbit hole and I was watching all of these. They've got a lot of sitcoms from the 60s in their entirety on YouTube. And I watch vintage TV sometimes, but I was watching several of the Dick Van Dyke Show that was on for about 5 seasons in the early 60s. Rob and Laura Petrie. And there's an episode. I don't know if you know who Carl Reiner was, but he created that show. And the powers that be loved the writing, but they thought his family seemed too Jewish. So he'd already written all these scripts. They said, let's do the same scripts with what you would call Goya, you know, Gentiles. So that's why they hired Dick Van Dyke. He was actually playing Carl Reiner. But what Carl Reiner did, don't shoot the messenger. Don't look at me like I'm a man in a semi. I'm just saying. And it was a Jewish guy that told him that, by the way. But he created a character who, because Carl Reiner used to write, some of you, I'm way too young to remember this, but there used to be a show in the 50s called Your Show of Shows that Carl Reiner and Mel Brooks and Neil Simon, all these guys who became these amazing writers were part of that writing crew. So Carl Reiner wrote a series where he played this guy, fictitious guy named Alan Brady, and Rob Petrie was the head writer for the Alan Brady Show. Okay? Y'all still with me? And I just happened to watch this episode where I guess it was supposed to be their equivalent of what would have been Time Magazine at the time. They come to do an interview with Rob about writing for Alan Brady, who's this megalomaniac, narcissist, impossible to work for guy. Carl Reiner wrote this part. I'm getting to a point. So in the interview, Laura comes and sits down with them at this place, and she starts saying, you know, my husband's really an unsung hero, and Alan Brady gets all of this credit for being so funny, but somebody's writing those funny words, and which he's like, would you shut up? He's like, it's not just me. There's two other writers. Their names are Sally Rogers and Buddy Sorrell. And I know because I've been interviewed by newspapers before, and when I've read the interview, I'm like, that is so not what we talked about. So sure enough, when the article comes out, It makes it look like, you know, Alan Brady better get down on his knees and thank his lucky stars that Rob Petrie, you know, wrote for him, because he's not funny. All of that's coming from funny writers, which, of course, you know, he's afraid he's going to lose his job. And Alan Brady calls him into the office and he says, I can't quote it all, but he had counted how many times his name was mentioned and how many times Rob Petrie's was mentioned. And they didn't get Sally and Buddy right. They didn't say the right names right. And they were real ticked off at him. And the point of the episode, it reminded me of a situation that I went through, not just with, don't try to figure out who I'm talking about, because this actually happened with three or four staff members over the 30 years that I was at Church in the Now. But once the church got really big, the local papers would come, they'd want to do stories on our youth group or on our children or whatever. And sometimes they'd interview me, but sometimes they would interview whoever was in charge of that ministry. That's totally fine. I'm totally good with that. We'd go to a staff meeting and whichever pastor would say, hey, I'm doing an interview with the Rockdale Citizen. I'd be, oh, that's cool, good, you know. And there was a time we had just a whole wall full of framed interviews that people had done about the miracle of Church in the Now. I used to pastor this church at college. I don't know if you've heard of it. So on more than one occasion, when the thing came out, the article would be all about the children's ministry or the teen ministry or the outreach to the housing project. And, I mean, it's like a half-page article, and there's no mention of me anywhere in the article, that somebody started this church and hired this person and, you know, created this platform for them to flourish and said, here's a building and a salary, make it happen. And I used to have a real problem, because I would say, did it not come up at all that there's a senior pastor here? And I can remember I used to have this issue with several people who couldn't understand. They would be like, well, we just didn't know it mattered that much to you. And I said, I know, but it just didn't come up in conversation that somebody pastors this church. If I said any more, you'd start connecting the dots, and I'm trying to keep it anonymous. But, and I even asked other pastor friends of mine, I said, let me ask you something. If your children's pastor did a half page article interview and you were never mentioned and it made it sound like they're the pastor, what would you do? And to a man, everyone said, I'd fire him immediately. I said, well, okay, then I don't think I'm overreacting. But what I would hear back is, on more than one occasion, well, we just thought it's kind of ego that you wanted your name mentioned. So then it would become this sarcastic thing. If another one came out, they said, be sure you say his name a bunch of times. And I would say, I don't think y'all are understanding. I'm thrilled that y'all are. It's just, so finally I explained it to one of them. I said, let me put it to you this way. Let's say I told you the Rockdale Citizen's coming out to do an article on our children's ministry, and I'm going to meet with them. Wouldn't your first thought be, well, they'll probably ask me something. But what if I did a half-page newspaper article where we went through all of your facility and I talked about puppet shows and Bible lessons and I took the credit for, you know, youth retreats and all this stuff. Would that be problematic to you if I never mentioned your name? Like, I walked right by your office and said, yeah, the way I minister to these children just makes such a difference. And I finally got through to them. They're like, oh, I said, it's not that I'm just wanting an article about me. It's that I flew somewhere and found you and hired you and moved you here and helped you get set up in a house. And you're like, just say, you know, if nothing else, we try to make our children or youth vision in line with the senior pastors. At least that. Even if you don't say my name, just say, you know, I didn't start this church. Somebody hired me. This church was here for decades before I got here. And my point in saying it is, the more there was a time, the more I would try to explain it, it just became an issue. You know, finally they're like, well, we just won't do any more articles. I said, that's not what I'm saying. I'm thrilled that you've been successful enough that they want to interview you. I'm not taking that away from you. I'm just saying, I'm trying to think of other ways to explain, like if you were married and somebody came and toured your home, like if a man was interviewed and they were saying, oh, your home's so beautiful. And he's like, he never mentions his wife. He says, oh, yeah, well, you know, I just like to do the cooking and the cleaning. And, you know, I think somebody would have said, hello, there's somebody else. There's somebody else here. And the only reason I'm bringing it up is this Dick Van Dyke show made me remember that. And I thought, you know, apologies sometimes show you the lack of empathy that somebody had. Let me show you this quote, and maybe I'll make my point better. Kathy Burnham Martin says, apologies require taking full responsibility. No half-truths, no partial admissions, no rationalizations, no finger-pointing, and no justifications belong in any apology. Like, for instance, if you're upset with somebody and you tell them what you're upset about, and they don't really apologize, they say, well, I'm sorry you got so upset. I think it'd be better just not even try to apologize, because you're still not acknowledging that I have a valid point. You're not trying to understand what I'm talking about. Let me show you the second one, or the third one. Did we lose internet again? Oh, all right, there's Mark Matthews. I rebuke this internet demon. Apologizing does not always mean you're wrong and the other person is right. It just means you value your relationship more than your ego. Show me the next one. Amit Kalantri says this. If an apology is followed by an excuse or a reason, it means they are going to commit the same mistake again they just apologized for. Like, I'm sorry I got busted. But really, if somebody says, I'm sorry you got up so upset about this, there's a certain condescension to that. It's basically implying you're a big baby. You should have just blown this off. And that's why empathy is so important. Again, my teaching here is not just about apologies. It's about empathy. It's about why people try to right their wrongs. Now, I'll give you another example, another Church in the Now story. When I started the church, as soon as I was in a denomination, the day they approved me to start a church in Conyers, I left Macon, which is where their headquarters was. I drove immediately to Conyers, and at night I started driving around, and I found this place on Royal Drive, and I said, this is perfect. And sure enough, that's where we started Church in the Now. It was then called Word of Faith. We started Church in the Now, and we were there for several years before we moved to the grocery store and renovated it. And I loved that facility. Debbie and I were married in that facility. I mean, it was very special. Well, after I left the Assemblies of God, after they asked me to leave, because the day we got back from our honeymoon, I received a call, you know, you're out, because in that denomination, you can't be doubly married. It doesn't matter. Anyway, that was the thing. So we ended up losing the property that we had originally bought on Klondike Road. And let's just say I've started over several times in my life. So one day I'm driving by the old facility, and I see that a guy, and Pastor Tim Hogg will not mind me saying this at all, because he's actually the good guy in this story. I see his name up there in the building that I found and picked out, and that was my place. And it really bothered me on two levels. First of all, my dad worked for the Georgia District, so that meant my dad would have had to have approved him to go. Why didn't you just mention to me, by the way, Tim Hogg's in your old building? I'm not asking for permission, but that just might have been a bit of information I might have needed, or at least for Tim to say, hey, just want you to know, I'm going into your old building. Because Tim and I went to college. His wife, Debbie, we were all in the same. We weren't good friends, but we went to school together. It just caught me off guard. And so when we'd be in restaurants, we would see Tim and Debbie all the time. And I would never not speak to somebody, but there's a way you can let somebody know, I'm speaking to you, but I'm not really that good. You know what I mean? Like there's, oh, y'all don't know how to do that? I should teach you. There's a way you can say hello. You know what I'm talking about. There's a way you could say, she's born on April 3rd, she knows. There's a way you can let somebody know, I'm really ticked off at you, but I'm going to take the high road and still speak to you because I'm not going to be pulled down into some, you know, ridiculous, you know, like I'm not. Anyway, bottom line is, that happened for a while. Every time I would see him, it was just obvious I was ticked about something. So one day I get a message from the secretary, Tim Hogg's here to see you. And I thought, oh crap, what is this? So I said, yeah, okay, fine, let him in. So he comes to my office and he's holding a loaf of bread. He said, my wife Debbie baked this for you and I want to give it to you. I said, okay, thanks. I mean, I was still like, okay, whatever, thanks, bread, tell her, thanks. And he said, can we talk, please? And I said, yeah, okay, sure. And he said, you're clearly upset at me about something, and I have no idea what it is. Charles is coming to the altar to get saved. Oh, did we lose internet again? I thought the power of God was moving so strong in here that Charles fell under conviction. He was coming to the altar, every head bowed, every eye closed. Just as I am with. I don't know if you're still on. We'll get the full thing loaded. We don't know what's going on with the interview. I mean, with the internet. So anyway, he said, I have no idea what you're upset about. I said, I'll tell you what I'm upset about. You know, I've known you all these years. We went to school together. I'm just driving by one day, and I see your name up on the sign that I initially bought, and I think I'm probably more upset with my dad that he didn't mention it to me, and I may be projecting it on you, but it's just, I don't know. It's not like I'm, you know, mad at you or don't want you to be there. It's just, it caught me off guard, and I don't know how to process it. I said, I don't know if you've ever been kicked out of a denomination organization. It makes you sensitive in areas. There's things I'm super heightened awareness to that I wouldn't have years ago. You need to, did you find it? All right. Avery's going to pray with Charles. Because he came to the altar, but then he got cold feet. So just pray with him, Avery, until you get a breakthrough. Now he went back. He's not coming. Just keep praying. So anyway, I said, you know, if we had both been vacuum cleaner salesmen that went to college together, I just think I would have gotten a courtesy call from you to say, by the way, I'm taking over your old territory. He said, fair enough. I see your point. You should have heard it from me. He said, however, none of us in the Assemblies of God think that you care at all what we think about anything. He said, we kicked you out and you flourished. You went and built a much bigger church than any of us had. So he said, quite frankly, I'm flattered that you care what I think about anything, which that kind of made me feel good. It's like, well, that's right, Assemblies of God, you better recognize. But the point is, he got the point and I understood. And that was one of those things where it ended well. And as far as I know, the last time I drove through there, they're still there. They've ended up buying that whole little shopping center. And they've, you know, he's been there for years and years and years. And, which I'm glad. I'm glad that worked out that way. But I'm trying to make a point that sometimes the way someone apologizes to you lets you see their level of empathy. Or like, yeah. Or someone saying, I'm sorry you got so upset about it, it's kind of a jab a little bit. It's kind of them saying, you know, I'm going to apologize, but frankly, I think you're a little bit touchy and fretful, which only makes it worse. The next one I want to show you, if we've got it, can we? No? We got it? Nope. All right. Say what? Well, it's not your fault. I'm sorry you got so upset about it, Michelle. Do y'all understand? Do you know what I'm talking about? Has anybody ever apologized to you and you're like, you know what? You shouldn't have even tried because you so don't get it. And if I have to explain it to you, now I feel like I'm still dragging it out of you, especially if I explain it to you and I can tell by the look on your face, you still don't get what I'm upset about. I remember sometime years ago, not at all now. It's like when I talk about that person, I'm talking about another person in another life. I mean, everything about my reality is completely different now. But I remember somebody saying to me one time early on, they said, you know, do you think you're surrounded by too many yes men? I'm like, good God, I'd kill for a yes man. Are you kidding? I am surrounded by people who challenge me on every point. I had a, now I've opened this Pandora's box. When we were moved to the grocery store, that's not there now, it's a gas station. But we were there after I'd been excommunicated, and we started over. I had a board member who took me outside. He said, I need to show you something. I said, okay. And this guy was a commercial pilot, made four times what I made. And he walks out and he says, that right there. So I'm looking at like, what? And it was a little plaque on the brick wall of the 40-year-old grocery store that said, reserved for Pastor Swiller. He said, that's ego. I said, a reserved parking space? I said, that's pretty standard. Like if somebody's the CEO of a company, they've got a space. I said, that even in church world, you go to the littlest Baptist church somewhere, the pastor's got a parking space. He said, that's you wanting people to see your name. And finally, of course, I know y'all can't believe I was sarcastic. I said, you know what? I have been kicked out of a denomination that took all of the money that we raised to build a church. They took all of it. So we're back to square one. All the money that we raised, all gone. I'm in, no offense to those of you that live there, I'm in Rockdale County, Georgia, in a 40-year-old converted grocery store that, quite frankly, is falling apart, but we're making the best of it. Would you indulge me the extravagance of this little plaque on the side of this ugly brick wall that says, I got a place to park? I mean, I know it's a lot. And I'm sure people in Hollywood are saying, you know, oh, to have a plaque on the side of a grocery store in Rockdale County, then I would be somebody. But I the whole time this guy was there, he never did get that. And, of course, then years later, I was at a funeral where his ex-pastor was there. And he came up and he said, look, I don't know you, but I just want to tell you, watch out for this guy because he's going to cause you trouble. And I said, oh, no, they're wonderful people. And that day I was remembering, like, oh, your ex-pastor warned me about you. And I had somebody one time, they said, why don't you put a suggestion box out in the lobby? I said, my whole life is a suggestion box. Let me show you the inbox of my email. It's endless suggestions of crazy things that I'm never going to do, that people get offended because I don't do their cockamamie, they've never had a church, never had a Bible study, and they're giving me these crazy ideas that I'm not looking for ideas. I'm not looking for unsolicited advice. No, I think I'm going to pass on the suggestion box. Well, I just think people have opinions about things. I'm like, yeah, I'm aware. You ever had somebody give you unsolicited advice and you're like, you know, thank you. I'm sure you mean well. You have no idea what you're talking about. And that's why I'm bringing up the whole thing about apologies. Because when somebody acknowledges a wrong, it shows you how well they know you. And it goes both ways. I mean, because I've been on the other end of that, if I do feel like I have wronged somebody or if they bring something to my attention, if I have a valid relationship with them, I have learned now to say, explain to me exactly what you're upset about, because I don't understand it exactly. And I don't want to make excuses for it. I'll tell you how I've been on the other end of that. I've already told you this, but this has been a year ago. Jared and Jonah were both on tour, and so Judah and I had dinner one night. And he said, I watch your teaching. He said, sometimes you say some stuff that's kind of hurtful. I said, what are you talking about? He said, well, you know, people that stayed in Conyers and they go to my church, and some of them, most of these people have left now, but some of them had problems with you when you came out, so they go to my church. And I said, you know what? I'm busted. You're totally right. I said, I'm assuming, you know, I'm not blaming you for that, but I can totally see why, if I was on the end of that and hearing that, of course that's what it sounds like, and I'll never do it again, and I'll make a public apology. He said, no, you don't have to. I said, no, I'm completely wrong in that. I'm not seeing it from your vantage point. I said, how long have you felt this way? He said, for about a year now. I said, why didn't you tell me? I said, from now, y'all, I've said this to all my kids, from now until I go, whenever that is, if y'all have an issue with me, please tell me, because I'm going through life thinking, la, 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 I'm the dad of the year, and, you know, have no idea. Like, that's a really valid point. And I'm glad that you brought it up, and it made me examine some of my own unfinished business. I thought, why do I even care? I should be happy that they've got a church to go to. And again, I'm not thinking he's assuming I'm blaming him for that. But of course, what else could he think? I said, you are exactly right. I am totally wrong. And I'm buying your dinner. Of course, I buy their dinner most Wednesday nights anyway. But anyway, the point was, it's actually very liberating if somebody brings up something to you and you think, you know what? You got me. That's a valid point. And I'm not even going to make, if I try to make an explanation, it still sounds like I'm not apologizing. If I have to say, well, yeah, I said that, but you just don't know what. That's inappropriate. Yeah, there's something with just saying, I was wrong. We have it back up. Okay. Benjamin Franklin says, never ruin an apology with an excuse. Again, an excuse is saying, well, this is why I did it. That's not the point. If the conversation comes up and there's a place to explain it, but if you're in apology mode, apology just means I hear you. If someone didn't hear you, they didn't really apologize. The hearing of somebody is the empathy. That's the implication that you deeply heard. But sometimes you have to explain. I remember when Tim Hogg said, I'm going to apologize, and you're exactly right, but I'm shocked that you even care. I was like, well, thank you. I'm not thinking that. I'm thinking, you know, I'm totally seeing it from my vantage point. And sometimes when it's the proper flow, somebody can help you with empathy. That's why I think if you can say it with a pure heart and without sarcasm, I think it's totally valid to say, explain to me what you're upset about, because I'm not fully grasping it. Your feelings matter to me, so I want to understand. And sometimes you don't even know what you're mad about yourself. Like I told Tim that day, I said, I don't know if I'm upset with you or upset with my dad. And, you know, with my dad was that generation, if you were upset with him, like, too bad, so sad. Like, there's no, like, we don't confront dad, you know. And I don't want to be, I'm not that. I'm like, no, tell me what the issue is, because maybe I'm not fully hearing you. Maybe I'm not seeing things to your vantage point. And if I can have empathy in this situation, a little part of me is going to heal a little part of the planet. And if everybody would do that, to at least say, let me understand why you're why you're feeling the way that you do. I could tell you 100 stories like this. I've said this before. She's probably streaming today, but I've said this. She's heard me say it publicly, but y'all know Leslie Brizendine, that they live in Darien now. Well, you know, Leslie's like I'm not uncovering her. She's a big-time feminist and very progressive in her politics and what. And so one day I said something in a sermon where I said, this guy, you know, he should have manned up, but he was just acting like a little girl. And she said, you've got a lot of little girls in your church. And she's like, in midway explanation, I said, I completely hear you. You're exactly right. Because I'm not thinking that's an insult, but it is. That's a male patriarchal authority figure saying to all those little girls in my church, to be like you is to be an insult. There might be some things a grown man can learn from a little girl. Maybe some little girls might have some insight in an area that a big grown man doesn't have. And I said, you know what? Valuable lesson. Thank you. But I could receive it from her because I knew what her intent was. I said, thank you. You helped broaden my horizons in that. And that was a teachable moment for me that's made me aware of a lot of things. Things that I could have said about different situations. I think, I'm going to phrase that differently now because I'm trying to be empathetic. I'm trying to be inclusive. I'm trying to bring prophetic insight and healing to the world. We have one more by Gilbert K. Chesterton. A stiff apology is a second insult. The injured party does not want to be compensated because he has been wronged. He wants to be healed because he has been hurt. That says it all. Like if you've got to drag an apology out of somebody, it still doesn't heal your hurt. You're not just asking for compensation. You're wanting somebody to get it. This is not about me proving that you were wrong. It's me knowing that you know who I am. And we're in relationship. I'm telling you, this is super important. And having a dumb plaque on a wall is not a sign of ego. Not being able to hear somebody out is a sign of ego. And to be able just to let somebody finish their thought without somebody else trying to show them immediately how wrong they are for seeing it that way. Because here's the thing. If you saw it that way, that was your reality. So for someone to dismiss that and say, you're crazy, you should have never seen it that way, that's being dismissive of them. It didn't even occur. If somebody had said to me, before Judah told me that, if somebody had said to me, you're disrespecting your son as a pastor, I'd be like, I certainly am not. What are you talking about? It wouldn't have even occurred to me that would have been how that could have been interpreted. And as soon as he told me, because he didn't come in, you know, I mean, I had to really sort of drag it out of him, actually. And I said, oh, I hear you. Absolutely. And I think I might... Did I mention that the day? It seems like I might have mentioned it in my teaching the day that we were out there, first Sunday of February. I can't remember, but I know I've said it. I know I've said it publicly, and he knows that I've said it publicly. Which again, he didn't ask for it. He said, I'm just tired of watching your teaching and feeling crummy about it. He said, will never happen again. And then I want to end with, I'm going back to 1 Corinthians 13:7, but this is in the Message Bible. And it says, love bears up under anything and everything that comes, is ever ready to believe the best of every person. Its hopes are fadeless under all circumstances, and it endures everything without weakening. The whole point of the people in your life is to, you want to believe the best in them. Like, sometimes when you really feel like you've been there for somebody and they get upset with you about something, there's nearly like, it's nearly like a double hurt, because a part of you wants to say, how could you possibly think I would ever mean that against you? But the point is, if that's how they interpreted it, you have to just not defend yourself and say, I don't know where that came from, and I retract everything that I said. Because if you say, if you're indignant that they could think such a thing, you're still insulting them. You're still saying your paradigm of this is not valid. And usually what it comes down to is basically just one thing. I just want to know that I have this one place with you that is non-negotiable. That's one thing. In this movie I was telling you about, the husband was saying, "Why?" He said, "I'm not even a writer. Why does it matter to you so much?" She said, "Oh my God, the fact that you don't understand how much I need your validation is even making it worse. Your opinion of my writing means more to me than anybody." Well, he said, "I had no idea." He said, that's not my area of expertise. It was very, very enlightening. I thought, man, whoever wrote this script, that's the way it works. And people go through life with unresolved things just because they didn't get the right acknowledgement. And let me say, sometimes you're never going to get the apology. You have to learn to say, we're not ever going to resolve this. I mean, in the last few days, I've reached out to several people that I used to see at Metron that I don't see anymore. And to a person, they're like, "Oh my God, we love you so much." And I'm like, "Well, okay. I don't want to yell at you, but where are you?" "Oh, we love you. We'll always be on you." "Okay, great." I nearly would say, I mean, my landscape is littered with people. I remember when I first met Ken, he said, "I've never seen a man that has so many people that adore him that don't show him." I said, "Baby, you just, that's the mystery of my life." It'd be one thing if people said, "I tell you why I left." But I haven't gotten that for years. It's just the mystery of the ghosts. My life is a continual ghost story. If somebody would just say, "Look, we love you, we just don't go out much anymore," I'd be like, "Okay. Well, just, but I can't help, but why would you think otherwise?" "Well, I don't know. You used to come every Sunday and you support financially and you, like, all of that has stopped. The thought occurred to me, is everything okay?" And I don't want to go through life going, "Are we okay? Are we okay? Are we okay? Are we okay? Are we, like, I don't want to be that guy." So a lot of me just says, "Well, okay." That's why today, those of you that showed up today, I'm like, "Yay." Because just like I was surprised when Tim Hogg told me that the Assemblies of God didn't think that it mattered to me, guess what? It matters to me when you stop showing up. How could you possibly take that personally? I don't know. I just do. I mean, am I crazy on this? It would be like somebody saying, "I love you and I want to get married, but we're not going to be together. We're not going to hang out together. We're not going to live in the same house. We're not going to sleep together, but we're going to be married." Because I don't know if that's really married. But anyway, I don't want to shame anybody or put anybody, you know, make anybody feel bad, that I'm probably too, like, you know, it's like telling people the difference between me and Jesus is, you know, one of the sheep leaves the fold for Jesus. He leaves the 99 and goes to them. Not me. When somebody leaves the fold, I'm like, "Well, I guess they just need some space, and I don't want to crowd them, and I don't want to," because, you know, in the early days, I had a lot of people tell me why they left, and, you know, that's happened a lot. So I'm like, I don't want to dig at that sore too much. You know, because somebody might say, "Really? You really want to know?" I mean, I have, in the past, I've had some letters that were so long. I'm not exaggerating. I literally, like, did like that, and it just rolled out of accusations. Just stupid stuff. Like, once in 1992, you walked right by me, and you didn't seem happy to see me. I'm like, "Oh, my God." And at a certain point, you have to just blow it off, or you would, there's no way you could walk out on the stage. Because with everything you say, you want to say, I don't mean you. I'm not saying I'm above trying to get a point to get over to somebody when I'm speaking, but it has been my experience that Anybody I ever tried to get a point over to in teaching never got it. And the ones I wasn't aiming for would meet me afterwards saying, when you said that today, you looked right at me and I knew you were talking to me. I'm like, oh, I'm so not talking to you. I was talking to that guy behind you. What was your name again? Like, I don't know. Like, how, I just knew you meant me. And I can tell, you know, you've been saying several things. I can tell what aimed at me. I'm like, oh my God, no, they're not. And I, you know, now I would try to say, what's making you think that I think that? I mean, I've had people say, I don't know, I just get the feeling that you want me to leave. I'm like, did I say something? No. Did I do something? No, but it's just a feeling I get. Okay, I'll try not to send out vibes of feeling. I mean, I don't know. I know this is completely irrelevant to y'all. Y'all are like, hey, we're here. We got it. Shut up. I understand. Y'all are definitely the hardcore people that are like, we've heard all your stories and we're still here. Like, okay, I got it. And I have plenty of people like that. I hope I'm not coming across whiny. I'm trying to understand, you know, the keys of the kingdom. Like, what unlocks relationships? Because sometimes somebody will get an idea about something. You know, one thing about Ken I learned early on is if he was really quiet and I'd say, are you okay? And he said, why are you asking? Well, I don't know, you're just kind of quiet. And I remember early on he said to me, I'm simple. Like, if I'm upset about something, I would just tell you. And I could tell he's telling the truth. Because I'm complex. You know, I'm like, haven't you noticed I'm being a little bit, you didn't notice I'm being a little quiet. You might want to investigate that a little bit. And I learned from that. I thought, wow, that's awesome. Because years of the ministry makes you a little, believe me, everybody in my family's in the ministry and they're all whack jobs. I mean, we just all are, because everybody's been through so much stuff because we've all lived these public lives. And I would say that to any one of them, they'd be like, I fell on the floor laughing about this because I got a call from a cousin a few years ago that I just thought was insane. Like, this is the, like, somebody was upset about me, something that I'm like, how could you possibly think that? So I call another cousin, and without any preface, I just said, can I ask you something? Is so-and-so crazy? And without missing a beat, they said, yes, you didn't know that? I said, okay. Like, she didn't say, why are you asking? I was like, yeah. I said, okay, that's what I wanted to know. Because I feel like I'm taking crazy pills. Anyway. But the point is, when he said, like, another thing I've learned from him that's really has influenced me in a positive way. Like, if he's ever come home from work and he's upset about something that happened that day with the boss or, you know, with one of his kids or something, and he's, you know, says something. I mean, when a kid says something about anybody, it's like, wow, it's so rare for him to say anything about anybody. And so then later, a few hours later, before he turns in for the night, I'll say, are you okay? Yeah, why? Well, I don't know, when you came home, you were like really upset about it. He said, oh yeah. And I thought, wow, you really have the ability to say your thing and be done with it. That's awesome. Like, some people, that's not in their personality. It's like, I said my thing and I'm going to have to say it to 17 more people. You know, and even then, it ain't going to be right for a while. And I thought, wow, that's beautiful that you can just say your stuff and it's all out of you. Like, wow, how does one do that? And, but I have learned in the 11 years we've been together that really is the truth. That is how he is. And I think, man, I don't know how you develop that. But if I spout out about something, it's typically just the tip of the iceberg. It's like, be prepared. You're going to hear so much about this in the days ahead. This is just a preview of coming attractions. Here's something we're going to be talking about a lot for a while. And actually, I've gotten a lot better. Now, I can't tell you how many times, even just this month, something will come up and I'll be like, that's the way they see the world. I respect that. I'm not going to change it. So, namaste. And it's actually a more peaceful way to live. That's just the way some people see things. And you just have to say, I'm probably not going to convert them to my way of thinking. So I'm just going to coexist with them. And again, love bears up under anything and everything that comes, is ever ready to believe the best of every person. That's a really good one. You know, before you take something personally, really ask yourself, do you really think that was aimed at you? Because I've seen people post things online that I was just sure was aimed at me. And after we talked about it, I don't think it was. And, you know, I confronted them about it and they said, yeah, well, but now there's been a bunch of them that was exactly what I thought it was most times. But again, this is all old stuff. I feel like I'm talking about stuff from the 30s and 40s. I think I'm talking about the Great Depression. It's like it's so prohibition. It's so removed from where I am now. I'm only using them as tools for teaching because I think everybody can relate. So if you're going to apologize for something, make sure it's legit or don't even try. Because some things, if you try to talk about it, but you don't really get to what the actual issue is, all you do is infect that wound even more. Sometimes you say this, there ain't no good guy, there ain't no bad guy, there's only you and me, and we apparently just disagree. That was a song in the 70s. So, and that's okay. That's valid too. Some people aren't ready. Some people don't even know that's what they're thinking. Some people are mad at you and they don't even know they are. I'm at a place in my life where I want to stop trying to figure out everybody else and say, what, you know, if I have a reaction to something that I don't like, I want to make it about, like, why did I do that? Why did they get inside my head like that? Why did that hurt my feelings? Why did that anger me? And the more you can find those roots, the less people can push your buttons. It's like Jesus saying, Satan has come to me, but he's nothing in me. So we're going to end it on that. Let's all stand. Did you get anything out of this today? Good. Good. I want to meet with each of you afterwards because I've got some things I want to talk to you about. No, I don't. I'm good with everybody in here. Everybody. Except that Wellington. You got to watch him because I can't make any promises about him. Right. Yeah, because it's like, that's not an apology, that's an accusation. That's like, wow, you clearly, you just don't see things right. Yeah, exactly. Well, for the rest of the time that we all have left on this planet, I can't speak for you, but for me, I want to live in peace. I don't want to live in drama. I don't want to live in unresolved issues. I want to be an asset to the world, which I believe that I am, but I want to be even more of that. I want to be a blessing. Because I look back now and I think there's so many things in the past I could have handled better. And I'm glad that I can realize that. It's not like I'm getting down on myself. I'm just happy that I can see, like, that wasn't the best way to handle that. And good. Yay. That speaks to progress. All right. So before we leave on this series, love covers all mankind. I cover all of the people who are in relationships, all the people who are connected to other people. Spirit of God, give us the understanding how to communicate, how to hear, how to process. How can two walk together lest they be agreed? To learn how to be in agreement. To learn how to speak when it's time to speak and be silent when it's time to be silent. And I believe that just scratching the surface on the whole topic with this series is going to bring us all into a healthier place, healthier marriages, healthier relationships with our children, with our parents, healthy relationships with our friends, healthier relationships on our job, that we can speak the truth, but speak it in love, and that it's tempered, and that we're not so vulnerable to hurt, and we're not so insensitive to hurt other people. I pray that for everybody here today, for everybody at home watching, and believe that we all have the mind of Christ to walk better in all of these things. And the church said, all right, you're blessed when you come in, you're blessed when you go out, you're blessed in the city, in the country, in the basket, in the store. Blessed is the fruit of your body. You have a beautiful Memorial Day. And you wake up tomorrow saying, this is the day the Lord has enabled me to make. I will rejoice and be glad in it. God bless you. Go in peace.